digging the Rock and Roll Heaven podcast with LD, Will the Thrill, and TJ2.
Hey guys, welcome to Rock and Roll Heaven, the podcast where we talk about the lives, careers, and deaths of famous musicians. I'm your host, LD. Along with me for the ride, as always, is Will the Thrill.
Hey, that's me. Greetings and salutations.
And the person that's going to lead us through a very strange time and place, Mr. TJ2, the Deuce. And that's just a vacuum. That's bad radio. Bad radio. What are you drinking?
Whatever was cold and cheap at the gas station.
Oh, I think
it's Modelo.
So your mother-in-law.
Anyway. You went there.
No, Mama Gooch is a daggum saint. We love her.
Beyond
loving. She's wonderful. That was just an easy joke that I like to make. So anyway.
You're an easy joke.
Lesai. Okay. Anyway, we've had some illness in the family, and so Graham has been delayed by a week. Also, this new job, I'm not even joking, I have been working about 13 hours a day for 21 days straight, and so being able to write the daggum thing has been a challenge, so I apologize. We'll get to Graham soon, but then next week, Mr. Hickey's going to be running in a half marathon.
Yes,
and,
I will.
And I'll be ending my job of my marathon of a job, rather. So we'll be back to Graham soon. Sorry for the delay, guys. Anyway, Travis, what are we doing this week?
I think this week we're ripping up in the time-space continuum, plunging ourselves into the haphazard depths of traveling to a different time and place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, do I need to bring snacks or like chips or...
You have any of those dots, pretzels? Those are pretty awesome.
Beef jerky.
Ooh, beef jerky.
Beef jerky. Yes. We're going to need jerky.
Oh, can we get some Archer's jerky? Because that's the best jerky.
Good stuff.
Hashtag not sponsored, but Archer's jerky is the best jerky.
But if they want to, hey.
Hey, if Archer's wants to sponsor this podcast, I will eat it on the air.
Absolutely.
This will now be a completely ASMR podcast. Did I get it right that time?
You did.
Oh my God. Personal victory.
Ass to mouth. What?
Shut up.
Isn't that what ASM, what?
No, go.
Ah.
Go. Just start the episode. Start the episode.
Yes. So, the Beatles once noted that yesterday, all their troubles seemed so far away. Garth Brooks worried that if tomorrow never comes, will she know how much he loves her? The Foo Fighters told you to catch them if they get too high and that they'd be home next year. Timbuk3 said the future was so bright they had to wear shades. A plucky little ditty about a nuclear holocaust there. Madonna sang about future lovers. You can color me shocked that she pluralized lover. The Cure promised to be in love, but only on Friday. And Eddie Money really wants to go back and do it all over again and not have some succubus doo-doo pot break his heart. But womp womp, he knows he can't. He'd probably also like to play a sax solo, which he can do. Well, we can go backwards or forwards or slide sideways into some weird parallel dimension where we poop marinara sauce and spaghetti grows on trees because we are revving up TJ's time machine.
Ooh.
Yes.
And before we do that, how about we take our first sponsor break and then you can get right to it.
All right.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
And we're back. So what is for those who are just tuning in, what is TJ's Time Machine?
TJ's Time Machine is a time machine that's named for me.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, carry on. There you go.
Well, this week we visit a time when geriatric Clara Peller scoffed at the size of your meat. A fellow from Minnesota toted the biggest electoral ass-whipping in U.S. history, and Eastern Bloc countries boycotted the Olympics in lieu of getting lapped by Carl Lewis. So let's all cut loose, sweep the leg, don't cross the streams, and don't feed them after midnight as we set the way back dial to 1984.
Okay, yeah, nice. I'm just going to tell you, your intro sounded like a cross between one of those cards that your parents think is clever with that to give you on your 18th birthday, and they're like, the day you were born in 1939, bread was only 2 cents. And you're like, well, this just makes me sad. And then the speech that Kirstie Alley's character gives at the beginning of the pageant in Drop Dead Gorgeous. So, nice.
Good. That's totally what I was aiming for, because I've seen that and admired it so much. Anyway, so we start at the beginning of 1984, because that's where you start, unless your wallet says bad mother effer on it, of course. Then you kind of start in the middle and bounce around. So the first album noted as having been released in 1984 was one of the biggest selling of the year. It was certified as diamond for sales of over 10 million copies, but some estimates put actual sales at well over 20 million copies. But in a year full of giant blockbuster albums, it never actually got to number one, staying at number two for 5 consecutive weeks behind Michael Jackson's Thriller. It kind of followed the Fleetwood Mac formula of this band did of hating each other and breaking up and doing all the cocaine, and that perhaps that would produce good work. And it did, as it turns out. The guitarist in the band tried to work in the absence of his producer and lead singer, and he also started playing with keyboards, which feature prominently into many songs, and which represented a major shift in philosophy for the biggest hard rock band in America. You've probably already figured out that we're talking about an album actually named for the year itself, that being 1984 by Van Halen. By the way, in about 37 years, we're going to do a really crackerjack series on Eddie Van Halen, which you should totally check out. The album would actually be the last one featuring the classic Van Halen lineup of Eddie, Alex, Dave, and Michael, and it was the last that David Lee Roth would record with the band for 28 years. This song started off as a theoretical address to an underwear model that Dave saw in a magazine. Shocker. Yes, you do. And we have a fun fact.
Fun fact.
Fun fact.
The band got help finishing up the lyrics and melody to this song from Michael McDonald.
You don't know me,
but I'm your bro.
I keep forgetting, not in love anymore.
Chance with freedom.
I always thought he should sing Oughta Be a Law by Firehouse. Oughta Be a Law.
Are we good? I think we're good. Okay. David Lee Roth and producer Ted Templeman apparently wanted to pull this song off the record late in the process, but Eddie Van Halen lobbied to keep it and won the argument. Surprisingly, given the high concept videos that the band was noted for at the time, and from this album in particular, they did not make one for this song. Still, it hit number 13 on the pop charts and number 2 on the rock charts. So here is Van Halen with I'll Wait. We'll be right back.
Awesome.
All right. Not my favorite song from 1984. I mean, not a bad one. Opinions?
I mean, 1984 is just a solid album. So if you're picking a weak song off that album, it's still going to be good.
Right.
Let's be honest.
Or are you talking about the album or the year?
The album.
The album.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Okay, because I was going to say, you guys know in 1984, When Doves Cry does exist.
The what?
Also, I'm saying When Doves Cry does exist, so does Let's Hear It for the Boy and Take a Look at Me Now.
Yeah, but that one's got, what, Jump, Panama?
And I can't believe I slipped in something from Phil Collins and you guys didn't say anything.
So, yeah.
Who's LD? Slipping. What have you done with her?
What you guys are slipping. There? I almost
took me a second to process that I was so taken aback.
I just, my mind didn't catch it. Yeah.
I didn't just hear that. There must be another song by that title that.
What band is this?
Yes. This must have been by the Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs or the electric soap dispensers.
I'm just wondering how many people at home just thought that I got replaced with like a pod person.
Yep.
It's like, I hate T-Rex's bacon sucks. Nicolas Cage is a terrible actor. And Phil Collins is a god. And then you guys know something is wrong. Send help.
Something is amiss.
So the album 1984 isn't the only release that carried the genius fingerprints of Eddie Van Halen this year. Now, of course, he played the guitar solo on Michael Jackson's Beat It, and thus may have inadvertently helped keep his own album out of the number one spot. But he also took his lone stab at scoring a film, providing the music for the Cameron Crowe movie, The Wildlife. And speaking of movies, let's take a look at a fantastic year in film. So anybody want to take a stab at what the number one top grossing movie of the year was?
This was 1984?
Yes.
It was not Gremlins.
No, let me dig in my head.
84. And by that, she means look it up on her phone.
No, actually, I'm not, because I've got something else on my phone.
Back to the Future wasn't out yet, so.
Was it? Okay, no. I know what won the best picture for the year, but I don't know what the highest.
Ghostbusters? No.
Because.
Ding, 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 ding.
Was it? I was going to say, but won the Academy Award was Amadeus. That I know.
But Ghostbusters raked in $220 million at the box office in 1984, which adjusted for inflation is probably $500 million.
Hey, I know that we're all the way firmly in 1984, but do you ever think that they're going to come out with a trailer for the new Ghostbusters, like in the future, like 2024?
They'd never redo that. I think it's such a classic. Nobody would ever do it.
I don't know. It's actually, all joking aside, the new trailer looks amazing. Looks like a phenomenal film, and I cannot wait. I'm so excited. It's a.
I prefer Joe versus the Volcano.
You know, films are made. You know that. I love the Money Pit. Made after Tombstone, right? They did make. They did continue making films after Tombstone.
I preferred Breaking Two, Electric Boogaloo.
Okay, no one does.
My favorite musical ever. Anyway, so Ghostbusters was the top grosser, and by the way, this is the amount of box office revenue. Just during the year 1984, because there's one or two examples you'll see where something was released late in the year. It made a lot of money later, but most of Ghostbusters came in the calendar year of 1984. Number two was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. What a great.
Now, see, wow. I know somewhere in there is Gremlins.
Number three.
I know it sounds stupid, but Police Academy, was that on the list?
Police Academy, the original Police Academy, number five.
I think I would be remiss if it was not. I think I'm right about this. This was the start of my favorite horror series of all time, Nightmare on Elm Street. Am I correct?
But it didn't make that much money.
No,
that's
it didn't.
The thing.
But it started. Like,
I know. Splash came out that year. Beverly Hills Cop came out that year. Footloose came out that year.
You're picking off several of the top. I jotted down the top 12. So we had Ghostbusters, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which was a freaking awesome movie.
And Gremlins made a boatload.
But it's Indy and Short Round and that hot chick, whatever her name was.
Which, by the way, he is having, was it Kihei Kwan, is having just the resurgence. And I am totally here for it because he was in, I know my brother will never watch it, but he was in this amazing film called Everything Everywhere All at Once, won the Oscar for Best Film last year, and then he did season two of Loki as Obi. He's got a resurgence. He is so good.
Yeah, he's Short Round. He's always Short Round.
Okay.
Gremlins was number three. Karate Kid, number four.
Which LD still hasn't seen, just saying.
Wax on, wax off. Police Academy was number five. Footloose, number six.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills Cop,
Yep, love Footloose. Beverly Hills Cop was number 7.
Classic.
One you did not manage to pick off, LD. The 8th highest grossing film of the year was Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Yeah. And I know that now it's like a classic, but Terminator didn't make that much money when it was released.
No, it didn't, as we'll touch on in just a minute. Number 9 was Terms of Endearment. Romancing the Stone, a highly overlooked
movie. Oh, that's a fun one. Yeah.
I loved Romancing the Stone.
So Michael Douglas, right?
Yes, it was. Michael Douglas, Kathleen Turner, Danny DeVito. It was a great cast. Great movie. Splash was number 11, and number 12, Purple Rain.
Nice.
That actually charts lower than I thought it would have.
Yeah. Well, the soundtrack made up for that, but we'll get to that in a few minutes.
Okay. Fair enough.
Other highlights for the year include The Natural at number 14, Revenge of the Nerds at number 16. What a tour de force.
Booger.
Clap your hands, everybody. Everybody clap your hands. We're Lambda, 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 and Omega Mu. We've come here tonight to do our song for you. That's my okay. Bye. Hello? Is this thing on?
Yeah, it's on. It's on. I'm just letting you go.
Okay. Bachelor Party. Oh, was it 16?
Yes. It's a ridiculous movie. I love it.
What a ridiculously ridiculous and stupid but funny movie.
It's funny.
Red Dawn was number 19.
Oh, my God.
Yep. The Terminator was only the 21st highest grossing movie of the year.
Which is crazy.
And then Terminator 2 made about 50 times more money.
Yeah, Terminator 2 was just insane.
Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter was in the top 25. The Muppets Take Manhattan was at 31, just ahead of a movie with, it's very similar in tone and theme, that being Scarface, number 32.
But The Never Ending Story, like, was an absolute flop. Did it even
get
top 50?
Yeah. Well, and Scarface is one of those movies. It was released in December, so it made a lot of money early in the next year.
Yeah.
So its actual gross would have had it much higher, but just for just that year, it was at number 32. 16 Candles was at number 37. Against All Odds was 39 and had a popular song on the soundtrack of the same name, which I don't guess we'll get to play. And just for you, LD, you just mentioned it at number 45, The Never Ending Story.
Okay. Can I just take a little sidestep
sure.
with the story about this? So everybody knows Will has Eli, his son, and his son lives in Germany. So when he was graduating high school, we decided that we were going to go to Germany to see him graduate because it's a big moment in a young man's life. So we go to Germany, and that's where I find out this on the other side of the country because he lives in Leipzig, which if you don't know, that's where the giant battle happened in what I like to call Avengers 2.0, which was Captain America Civil War. That's at the airport scene. That's the Leipzig airport.
That's the Leipzig airport.
Yeah. So I found out that the Bavarian Filmstadt is in Munich, Germany, and the Bavarian Filmstadt, there is a tour that you can go on because it's kind of like the Warner Brothers tour. You can go to this tour and you get to ride Falcor. So I, as a 40-year-old woman, took a train from Leipzig to Munich, which was like a 6-hour train ride, completely out of the way.
Germany is pretty
and
big.
It's a big country. So we took a 6-hour train ride and walked like 6 miles to get to this film studio. And then we found out that the only tour that they had at the time that we were there was a completely German tour. So it was all in German, but you could wear headphones and listen to, you know, like a standard narrator tell you about the things. And so I flicked forward and I found where Falcor was coming in, and I got to the front of the line, and the minute that the doors open and you get to see Falcor, just started openly weeping, like tears of joy, and I'm like, it's Falcor. And so the tour guide was like, you want to get on? I'm like, yes.
There's
so,
a picture.
There are two pictures of me riding Falcor where I just look like I just did like the best shot of Fireball whiskey ever. Like,
I think we have to post that for this episode. Like,
I think
that's gonna
we
be
do.
A snapshot.
Like it is complete unbridled joy. I'm just literally crying tears of happiness just riding on this giant replica of Falcor. So that's my how much I love The Never Ending Story.
And you went on the tour and listened to the narrator as he said, Glockenspiel, kindergarten.
That's the only words he knows, isn't it? But actually, I got to work with the
Spetzel.
I worked with the director of The Neverending Story, Wolfgang Petersen, years later on a movie called Poseidon. And he walked up to me, and I'm, you know, this is before the boat flips over because they actually had alternate outfit for me to wear when the boat flipped over. So I got to do this like really cool full body burn, and it was awesome. And I had the best time. But he walked up to me, and I had my, you know, clubbing outfit on. They had my hair fixed, but they had put one of those silly New Year's Eve hats on me. And he just walked up to me and he's very German. He goes, "My dear, you are a very, very beautiful girl, but that hat is so stupid." And he just patted me on the shoulder and walked away.
And he said, "Now touch my monkey."
Nope, he did not. He was a wonderful director. He was a wonderful person. God rest his soul.
Sadly, he has passed on, correct?
He has passed on, but he was an incredibly awesome director. And I miss him. Sad I'll never get to work with him again. That's my story. Okay, moving on.
All right. Well, so that was some of the big movies of the year. Now, obviously, it was a huge year for movie soundtracks, one of the biggest ever. Purple Rain, of course, featured 5 top 40 hits. It sold 13 million copies. And the album cut Darling Nikki inspired Tipper Gore and a bunch of other bored, tight-ass housewives to form something called the PMRC. The Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack went double platinum, and it had 4 huge hits on it. Then, of course, you had the Footloose soundtrack. It holds the distinction of finally knocking Michael Jackson's Thriller out of the number one spot on the Billboard album chart. It sold 9 million copies. It had the title track. It had Almost Paradise, Holding Out for a Hero, Dancing in the Sheets, and the song that we're going to play. It's by a native of Indiana who had actually been recording since 1968. She had a number one duet with Johnny Mathis in 1978 called Too Much, Too Little, Too Late, and the top 10 song It's Gonna Take a Miracle in 1981, but she's best known for this one. It was her last ever top 40 hit, by the way. You bet your balls I'm going to play Denise Williams and her song. Let's hear it
for the boy.
Nice.
I know that love.
we're back. I just love that song so much. That's one of my go-to karaoke songs.
Is it Thura?
Yeah.
Isn't there a line where she says, maybe he sings off key?
Yes.
There is.
And I do it. I say, maybe he sings off key. But that's,
but
all,
that's right. All right for me.
That's all right.
But he's
by
my
me.
Brother and
by
I'm keeping him.
By me. If you're going to quote it, get the quote right.
Love it.
Go ahead.
Come on. How can you not love that?
I love it. It is one of those just joyful noises. I love it. I love it.
Yes, absolutely. We move now from movies to the top TV shows of the year. Before we get to prime time, how about we go through some Saturday morning offerings?
Ooh.
Okay. You see, kids, there used to be these things called cartoons that ran on network TV on Saturday mornings instead of the Pet Doctor and crappy news shows and reverse mortgage infomercials, which is generally what comes on now. These are songs that debuted, Saturday morning offerings that debuted in 1984.
Hey, guys, I hate to interrupt, but we do need to take a short sponsor break. And we're back.
All right. We're back to TJ's Time Machine. Dragon's Lair. Mm. Anybody?
Yeah.
Based on the video game.
Dirk the Daring, yeah.
Yeah, Dirk the Daring. This is one that's gonna kick Lindley's feels right in the nuts. The Get Along Gang.
Each one is special in their own way. Montgomery's
get along,
the leader.
Gang, get along,
and
gang.
He is such a good
Each
sport.
One's special in his own way. Montgomery's
the leader, and he's
such
a good
sport.
Get along, gang, get along, gang. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There was Portia, Montgomery. Don't remember all of them, but does anybody remember Kid Video?
Hang on, before you move on to get from the Get Along Game, you had Montgomery the Moose, Dottie the Dog, you had a Lamb, Zipper the Cat, Portia the Porcupine, Bingo the Beaver, Breaker the Turtle, and Rocco was a raccoon, no, Rabbit, Rocco the Rabbit, and Flora Fox, yes, Flora Fox, and I want to say there was a squirrel and a bear.
And an ocelot.
I don't think there was an ocelot. There was a
and
cat.
And a ring-tailed lemur. How about a bush-tailed bitong?
But, like, the evil thing was, like, a lizard and a crocodile, which I don't know if the crocodile would eat the lizard.
I don't know. You know, lizards grow up to be crocodiles.
No, they don't.
Lizards, yeah, they do. Lizards. Yep, and monkeys grow up to be gorillas, and ponies grow up to be horses.
Shut up. Go on. Move on.
Kid Video, by the way, was like... Kids got sucked into a alternate world where they turned into cartoons.
Yes, I remember.
Is that right?
This.
Okay.
Yes.
Kids Incorporated, which of course started many, many careers, including who all was on that. Martika was on that.
Kids Incorporated.
Yeah.
Now I get Kids Incorporated mixed up with the Mickey Mouse Club, but Jennifer Love Hewitt was on it.
She was on it. Martika
Fergie.
Was on it.
Fergie was on it.
Fergie on that one.
Fergie was on it.
I think Fergie was, yeah. Yeah, I'd be interested to go back and look. Gosh, if only the collective knowledge of all mankind since the beginning of time were available at our fingertips.
Well, Mario Lopez was on it, too.
Ascertain really? People who were on it. Wow.
But I don't.
Okay.
I don't. Was. No. It was it Shanice? Like, I love your smile.
Shanice was on it?
For the whole hour.
Wow.
This is me just like pulling crap from my memory. I could be completely wrong. So if you guys remember the cast of Kids Incorporated, you know, and
I would bet money on Martika, Fergie, and Jennifer Love.
I'm almost 100% positive that Mario Lopez was on it because I think that's why they hired him, because they had seen him dance on that show for Saved by the Bell. I think so. But that
we have a role we're looking to fill for a tough guy wrestler, and we saw you dance.
Yes.
To be fair, there is the one episode where he does ballet to
Yes, he does.
Just like Kip Winger.
Who?
Yeah, Kip Winger did ballet.
It's a guy. He'll be along in a couple of years.
Kip.
Here's one that LD and I absolutely loved, watched every week, and I think recorded on VHS tapes to rewatch. That being Muppet Babies.
Yes.
Dude, I love Muppet Great Babies.
True. Muppet Babies was
but yet
awesome.
Yet I've never seen a Muppet movie.
Just bizarre.
That's puzzling. My Little Pony.
I love My Little Pony. Oh, my God.
The Transformers.
Yes. Well, you made me watch The Transformers.
The great Peter Cullen.
Will, who was your favorite Transformer?
I mean, it's cliche. It was Optimus Prime. I mean.
Really?
Peter Cullen,
jazz.
I mean. Was it?
I like jazz. Look, I'm well into a 24-ounce adult beverage, but did Scatman Crothers do his voice?
For jazz?
I think he did.
see the original? Then maybe.
Okay, so can I tell you a sad story about Scatman Carruthers? Number one, of course, like I know Scatman Carruthers from my favorite, it alternates between like three films, but pretty much my, bar none, my favorite horror film of all time is The Shining. And apparently Stanley Kubrick was such a monster on that film that he actually made Scatman Carruthers cry. And if you go, so hard to find his grave, but he's buried in the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. And I tried to get there, but it was a choice between trying to find Scatman Carruthers in a really big cemetery or going to a smaller cemetery and finding Mama Cass. And so I had to choose because we're actually going to be covering Mama Cass in this season. So, but apparently the upkeep on his grave was not that great. So it made me really bummed out.
Okay. Well, just let me point out that the collective knowledge of all mankind device that I have that I'm never sharing with anyone because I think it would do the world more harm than good, but I have it. It confirms it was Scatman Carruthers doing the voice of Jazz.
Oh, now, wow.
Correct if I'm wrong, wasn't Casey Kasem on there as well? I think he was like some of the Transformers.
Casey Kasem did a crap load of voice work. So
he was everywhere, yeah.
How about the Snorks?
Dude, loved the Snorks.
Loved the Snorks.
Loved the Snorks.
Rainbow Bright.
Yep.
Now, okay, but here's my question. The Snorks wasn't American, right? Like it started in like the 70s and then was picked up by American.
What was?
The Snorks. Like I'm pretty sure it was like probably like Belgium or Canadian or something like that. But it was
probably.
I think it came from the 70s and like we picked it up and then they redubbed it.
Okay. Interesting.
I think.
Do you remember the cartoon version of Pole Position?
No, I don't.
Pole Position. The game? Like the driving game?
I don't remember that.
So I remember the driving.
Those were the words.
Yeah. Oh.
You can bite me if you think those weren't the words to the theme song. And I think the underrated, and it only ran for 1 year, but kind of set the tone for a more popular live action Saturday morning show to come in a few years, Pryor's Place.
Do not remember that either.
With Richard Pryor.
Oh,
it was really good. It was really good. I remember it. They only did one season, but it was very, it wasn't quite as out there and imaginative as Pee-wee's Playhouse to come in a few years, but it was pretty close. It was good, as I recall. But I was nine. Okay, now either on cable in syndication or briefly on the network and soon to head to syndication were the following shows beginning this in 1984: Jeopardy,
ooh.
Charles in Charge,
great theme song.
Yep, it one that LD will remember because she loved it. Down to Earth,
love Down to Earth.
Which ran on TBS, I think?
I don't remember. I just remember, like, nobody else remembers Down to Earth.
But us.
Back in the days of Valentino, we know a maid named Ethel was so bright and alive.
Rack-a-doo, rack-a-doo, rack-a-doo.
But she was struck down by a trolley. Golly, said goodbye in 1925. Ethel in heaven awaited patiently to earn her wings and be an angel fancy free. 60 years later, the opportunity to help a family came.
Boop, 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 fiddle, 23 skidoo.
Back down to earth to teach the Prestons lessons. Richard, Lissy, Dwayne, and JJ too. Now she must be a 1980s lady. Down to earth, it's so angelical. Down to earth, it's quite a spectacle. Down to earth, it's just hysterical. She's down to earth.
And we're back. It's just so catchy.
It is.
Wait, what
year? She came back down to earth to teach the Prestons lessons.
Wait, yeah, because she was a flapper that got hit by a trolley.
Yep.
And
boop, boop, be-doop.
And she had to earn her wings, so she had to teach the family, you know, to love each other and stuff.
How'd she get hit by a trolley?
Because it was the 1920s. She was a flapper.
Still, she was probably, like a trolley really accident. Drunk.
Yeah. She was probably really drunk.
Dude, she was drunk hammered.
Probably. So, yeah, that
she
one.
She just stumbled out of an opium den with Curly and, Bill or something.
And Small Wonder was also like.
Yes, it was. Around the same time.
Which, God, Small Wonder was fantastic. We had, let me just tell you, we had some batshit crazy shows in the 80s, but
yeah.
that is like core memory. I don't remember when the Wuzzles came around, but I have a wuzzle.
So what's the idea you're pitching me? Okay. So there's an alien that lives with this really straight-laced family, and it tries to eat their cat. Okay. What else you got? No, that's it.
That's it.
And go. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll probably work.
There's
Nick
so,
Rocks.
There's so much.
That ear.
So much cocaine.
I just want to point out the fact that LD continually confuses the name of that alien with the singer of the Police. I just want to point that out.
It's not my fault. Is
Gordon Shumway is Alf. Gordon Sumner is Sting.
You can see why I would make that mistake. It's an easy mistake to make.
They should have switched jobs for a day. I would have paid so much money.
That would have been awesome. Imagine they're singing da do 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 da da da.
Exactly. Do do do.
In the house of stone and light.
Willie!
Yeah,
message
yeah,
in a bottle.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Of course, so. Willie's had a tough life after Alf, but we don't have to get into that. Very, very tough. Anyway, Nick Rocks, which I think LD watched, like they showed videos on Nickelodeon, like music videos.
Incorrect, because we didn't get Nickelodeon until like 91.
I disagree, because I distinctly remember you seeing Parents Just Don't Understand on there.
I don't think so. We had MTV until that unfortunate Funky Comadina incident.
Right, but I think I don't forget things like that. And you
I
do.
Wonder how many people are like, what is Lindley talking about, the Funky Comadina incident?
Does Tone Loc consider it unfortunate?
Mm-hmm. No, yes. I mean he's the reason why we didn't have MTV in
We didn't
downstairs.
Have MTV for a little while until I figured out a way to get it in my room. Anyway, and who remembers Putting on the Hits?
Ooh, it's a negative ghostwriter.
A show where it was a lip syncing contest.
Nope.
Yeah. Well, just trust me. It was a lip syncing contest.
I believe you.
And we're all better people for me having said that. Okay. So these were the top rated primetime shows for the year. And you'll see that there was a particular genre that was very popular at this point. Number one was Dynasty.
Oh, yeah.
Or Dynasty, as people used to call it, because that's what people did on that show a lot. Dallas, number two.
Oh, yeah. Now, wait. What season was the Who Shot JR episode? Because I feel like
a year or two before this.
Okay.
Yeah. I did not meet Larry Hagman, but he came and ate at a restaurant in the town that I work in.
Okay.
Yep.
Interesting.
He ate at the front porch out in Richburg.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think they still had his autograph picture hanging up in there.
Isn't that the place where President Bush called my dad and said, like, can you meet us out here? And my dad's like, no, thank you, sir. I don't like fish.
Maybe.
I feel like also my dad would not drive just out there just to eat. Like, that's too much of a bother.
Number three on for the year was a show that debuted this year, and next the next year it would ascend to number one and stay there for a while, The Cosby Show.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And that's all we're going to say about that.
That's all we're going to say about that. Theo gets an earring. Didn't that come with like a very special episode warning?
I think it did.
Theo gets an earring. And Sandra gets the clap. Did that get a special?
No, but you know what happened the night that the Super Bowl came on? Will went out to take the dog out, and I'm like, I want to watch. Oh, no, it was not the night of the Super Bowl. Sorry, it was like Thursday night, Will went to go take the dog out, and I was waiting for them to upload the newest video of Ghosts on CBS. And while he was taking him out, I like flipped around the Peacock app to try to find Ghosts. And they have a live channel on Peacock where you can just watch old Family Ties episodes. And there was special one where Alex P. Keaton got a speed addiction.
He was on speed, yeah.
He was on speed and he had a full-on crash. And I'm like, I did not realize there were special episodes of this at all.
How about 60 Minutes?
That was a show.
My favorite part of 60 Minutes was just when Andy Rooney would just like yell about things. Pretty sure that happened. That was probably my favorite part, was just him at the end just being
like, toilet paper.
Let's talk about airline peanuts. They're just so small.
Why does the Pope have to wear that big hat? It bothers me.
I don't like glass.
Basically, shakes fist at clown. That's pretty much what it is.
Indoor plumbing is overrated. It's just a whiny old kind of a old fella. Following the A-Team, Simon and Simon.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Murder, She Wrote.
Ah.
Not Landing.
Okay.
Falcon Crest. So, as I alluded to, you see that the primetime, like, soap opera sort of shows were really big at this point.
Yeah.
Number 11 was Crazy Like a Fox.
I remember Crazy Like a Fox.
Which only ran for two seasons. The show Hotel. Nope. A show that was still in its infancy, Cheers.
Oh, yeah.
Riptide.
Okay.
Magnum P.I., the brilliant Newhart, the also brilliant Kate and Allie, Highway to Heaven, Night Court, and The Scarecrow and Mrs. King. I believe that was your top one. A couple of other random samplings from further down the list, Cagney and Lacey.
Oh,
Hill Street Blues.
Grandma used to watch Cagney and...
See, now some of these, I didn't realize we're still on at this point, like The Facts of Life.
Oh, yeah. It was still on.
Who's the Boss was a fairly new show at this point. Benson was still hanging on, and so was The Love Boat. And so was Give Me a Break.
Wow.
With Nell Carter. Man.
Nell Carter.
A new show called Miami Vice, which would surge in popularity.
Now, Nell Carter won my heart on Give Me a Break when I found out that she actually sang the theme song to Give Me a Break.
Yes, she did.
And then I found out she was in Broadway shows. That moment on, I loved her, and I was so sad when she passed.
Yes. And a couple of the shows that were canceled this year include St. Elsewhere, which in my mind ran longer and later than 1980, the 84-85 season, but I guess not. The short-lived but pretty significant and really smart and very funny show, It's Your Move, with Jason Bateman. I think that was one of the first things he did. The Jeffersons ended that year. So did the crappy sequel, Aftermath, and the show Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer. Mickey Spillane, born in New York, lived in Merle's Inlet.
Oh, okay.
Called a friend of mine that worked at a newspaper down there. No, his wife did. And bitched him out about something or another. Among the shows that left, another show that left there in 1984 was The Dukes of Hazzard. Now, that, of course, featured country music legend Waylon Jennings as the balladeer, who we'll do a series on coming up in, I don't know, 29 years or so. But speaking of country music.
Wait, was that the right response?
What a smooth segue. I've always been a fan of Chart Anomaly. And we had one this year on what was then called the Hot Country Chart. There were 50 different songs to hit number one during the year 1984.
Huh?
50.
So there was only one song that
hung on. Were two songs that had multi-week runs at the top of the charts, and both of those only hung in for 2 weeks.
I'm gonna blame cocaine again. I'm
probably
just gonna...
Alabama, Exile, Earl Thomas Conley, Merle Haggard, Ricky Skaggs, and George Strait all had three number one hits apiece that year.
George Strait is unbelievable.
Who?
George Strait.
George Strait, is his longevity is insane. Yeah. Just Google and just start reading. The dude had like 35 platinum albums. The most absurd thing you ever heard of. The so-called young country movement had not come along to purge older artists yet. So Merle, Conway Twitty, Dolly Parton, and even the Statler Brothers all reached the top of the charts during the year 1984. Now, I mentioned there were two multi-week number ones. One of those, the last 2 weeks of the year, courtesy of mother-daughter duo The Judds with Why Not Me. The other came in May, and we're going to hear that song now. It is a quirky duo featuring a guy who has quirky duoed with basically every human that has ever sung. This Excellent. Is Willie Nelson and Spanish star Julio Iglesias with To All the Girls I've Loved Before.
Yes.
Nice.
To all the girls I've loved before, who travel in and out my door, I'm glad they came along. I dedicate this song to all the girls I've loved before. To all the girls I once and may I say I paid the best for helping me to grow. I owe a lot, I know, to all the girls I've loved before. The winds of change are always blowing, and every time they came we've loved before, who traveled in and out our door. We're glad they came along. We dedicate this song to all the girls we've loved before. Travel in and out our doors. We're glad they came along. We dedicate this song to all the girls we love.
And we're back.
All right.
That's classic. Classic. Before
walked in and out the door. That's great. How can you? There's actually a song that'll come out in the 2000s, which we're 20 years away from or so at this point, because we're in 1984. Called What Would Willie Do? Written by Bruce Robinson. And there's one song that said, there's a line where he goes, something to the effect of, he loves all of the people, no matter their races. Hell, he even had a hit country song with Julio Iglesias. And that okay. Ain't easy to do. When it's all too tough, what would Willie do? 1984 was an eventful year in terms of news and events. On January 24th, Steve Jobs launched the Macintosh personal computer, introducing it in a famous 1984 TV ad.
Oh, wow.
And with that innovation, we were one step closer to the dystopian hellscape that George Orwell warned us about. At this point, the Winter and Summer Olympics were still held in the same year. I don't know if y'all remember that used to be a thing. And now they stagger them where there's one comes up every 2 years, but they used to happen the same year.
Right.
The Winter Games took place that year in Sarajevo. Now, things got off to a fairly rough start with the Olympic flag being hoisted upside down to begin the proceedings.
Whoopsie.
Oh, dear.
As they lit the torch. Over the course of the games, Scott Hamilton won gold in the men's singles for the U.S., and Katarina Witt won the first of two of her consecutive gold medals for East Germany in the ladies' singles competition, thus beginning my lifelong infatuation with Katarina Witt. Because, wow, I would have turned commie for her.
But wait, now, was she the one that, like, right after the games, like, the night that the games ended, they snuck her out?
Probably.
I feel like,
you have to think about where she was from.
Well, there's a 30 for 30 about that. And I can't remember if this was
they
the
used
event.
To spy on her, and they like the government recorded her like hooking up with her boyfriend. You know, like there was really like weird, creepy, invasive stuff they did to her.
Frightening.
I was, you know, flabbergasted to be featured in one of those videos. What of my privacy in a weird like dream world? Okay, I found this interesting. The first TED conference, and thus the first TED talk, was held in 1984.
Really
interesting.
Yeah. Huh.
Wow.
I had no idea those dated back that far.
Neither did I. I thought it was like a newer thing.
I thought it was a much newer thing. Michael Jackson's hair caught on fire as he filmed a Pepsi commercial on January 27th. One month later, he would win a record 8 Grammys for his album Thriller.
I wonder if anybody's ever going to do a 21-part podcast on...
That'd be overkill.
That'd be crazy.
You'd have to have like zero life. Have no interest in attracting listeners.
Yeah.
21 parts. Okay. It's not like he's going to do anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
And now just trust me. He's going to crash and burn out this Thriller thing's over with.
Yeah.
Just mark my words. In May, 6 death row inmates in Virginia escaped prison. This is the only occasion that this has ever happened in United States history.
What?
Wow. Yeah. All were eventually captured and executed.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah. Terry Wallace, a 19-year-old from Arkansas, fell into a deep coma after a severe auto accident. However, he would awaken 19 years later.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. He was deemed to be, I believe, permanently minimally conscious, I think they said. But basically, he was in an almost vegetative state. But his family, I think, took him out of the hospital and they took him home and they would take him to the houses of friends and to his doctors actually think that constant interaction with people is part of why he eventually was able to awaken.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was, you can read about it. They actually did brain scans and found that his neurons reconnected by essentially reconnecting by making bypasses around the damaged connections between his neurons or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
It, like, they reached out to one another around the brakes. Because he had, like, severe, severe head trauma. Like, he went off, he hit a rail and fell into a empty riverbed, like, 25 feet below, upside down in a truck. I mean, it was a horrendous wreck, but it was, jeez. I mean, it's one of the more interesting things to read about if you've never aren't familiar with him. Now, in the Summer Olympics, which were held in Los Angeles, Carl Lewis tied the record of set originally by the great Jesse Owens by winning 4 gold medals in the Summer Games. 14 Eastern Bloc countries boycotted as an answer to the U.S. boycott in the 1980 Summer Games. And the United States absolutely obliterated the competition, winning more gold medals than any other country won medals, period, over the course of the games.
And we actually know, okay, so in Los Angeles, for those games, they actually painted murals across the city. And one of the most famous muralists who is from Los Angeles, his name's Kent Twitchell, and he did one of the most famous Olympic murals that exist. And had the opportunity to spend an extensive amount of time with Ken on his new, well, he was doing a, at the time he was doing a, basically a piece of art had been destroyed and they were going to recreate it on the side of the building at my college. And so they wanted a documentarian to document the whole thing. And so I took on the role. And so I have probably like 900 hours worth of footage that needs to be edited into an actual documentary. But I filmed the whole process and it was absolutely incredible. But yeah, he did one of the big murals for the Olympics. So
cool.
Yeah.
The Wendy's fast food chain coined a catchphrase for the ages in a TV ad. Now, it starred Clara Peller, who was the 8th of 9 children born to a family in Russia, which I did not know. Her father moved the family to America when he was drafted for the 2nd time into the Russian military. Now, Clara spent her life working as a manicurist and did not appear in her first commercial until she was 80.
Oh, wow.
What?
At 81, she appeared in the Wendy's ad in which she looked at a tiny patty sitting in a giant bun and said, "Where's the beef?"
Iconic.
The phrase appeared on bumper stickers and t-shirts and became a catch-all phrase that was actually used by Walter Mondale against Democratic primary opponent Gary Hart in a debate.
Maybe it's because his name is Mondale, like Walter Mondale. I always feel like he was in the 1800s. I never remember that he was in the
1800s. Mondale, as people used to call him. Peller even recorded a rap song called "Where's the Beef" with an artist named Coyote McLeod, which I believe we're going to spare you from having to hear. In November, Republican Ronald Reagan won his 2nd term as president, and he did so by opening the most gigantic can of electoral whoop-ass imaginable on the aforementioned Democrat Walter Mondale. Now, Mondale did make history by nominating Geraldine Ferraro as his vice president, the first woman on a major party ticket in the United States. That did very little to ward off the savage kneeing that was to come, as Reagan carried 59% of the popular vote and won 49 states, Mondale won only Washington, D.C., and his home state of Minnesota. And wow, he only won that by 3,000 votes.
Yeah.
The final electoral college tally was 525-13.
Huh.
Holy hell.
Ow, my Mondale. Now, we mentioned that Michael Jackson cleaned up at the Grammys in 1984. Well, one award he was not eligible for, obviously, was Best New Artist. That went to Culture Club.
Are we moving out of the news portion?
I was planning to, yes. We mentioned Michael Jackson cleaned up at the Grammys. As I said, he wasn't eligible for Best New Artist. Culture Club won that. They beat out Big Country, Men Without Hats, Musical Youth, and the Eurythmics.
That's actually a crime.
That is an odd lineup right there.
Yeah, it was basically a 2-team race.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Pretty much. Cheers won Best Comedy at the Emmys that year. Terms of Endearment won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Shirley MacLaine, and Best Supporting Actor, Jack Nicholson.
Oh, this is for the previous year, right? Because
Correct. Because it would represent for I guess, 80, part 83. Of 83 into 84.
Yeah, because Amadeus was released this year, but then...
Was released in that year and won...
And won the next year.
The ceremony, which was actually held in early 85, I think.
Yeah, gotcha.
I looked this up just for you, although I don't know how to pronounce it. I'll do my best. Best musical at the Tonys was La Cage aux Folles?
La Cage aux Folles.
La Cage aux Folles!
It's the only time I could speak French.
Vidois!
It's a La Caja Four.
Okay. And the writers bitch slap my beloved Washington Redskins, unfortunately.
Which, by the way, would go on to be an Americanized version, film version of that, with, I want to say, it was called The Birdcage, and I want to say, was it Kevin Kline and Robin Williams?
No, it was Nathan Lane and Robin Williams.
Okay, Nathan Lane and Robin Williams. Okay, yeah. Continue. Okay,
the Tigers won the World Series. The Celtics edged the Lakers in 7 games in the NBA Finals. BYU won the college football national title. And Patrick Ewing led Georgetown to a national title win in the NCAA basketball tournament, defeating Hakeem Olajuwon and Houston in the finals. We lost some greats in 1984. Passing away during the year were singer and actress Ethel Merman.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Musician and composer Count Basie.
Oh, yeah.
Groundbreaking comic Andy Kaufman is alleged to have died that year. Some people don't think that actually happened, but whatever. Singer Big Mama Thornton.
Aw.
Actor Richard Burton.
Well, before you move on, Big Mama Thornton was the one that recorded Elvis's big hit.
Hound Dog.
Hound Dog. She,
correct.
She was the original, and he did a cover of it.
He did a cover of it, right. She did it first. Writer Truman Capote, country music great Ernest Tubb, singer and songwriter Steve Goodman, and Indian Prime Minister Indira Gandhi was actually assassinated in 1984.
Wow.
There's two others that I'll come back to in just a second. Some celebrities born in 1984 include Kate McKinnon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Ben Shapiro, love Kate.
Scarlett Johansson, LeBron James, which means in 2024 he'll be 40. That's crazy. That doesn't seem right.
Nah.
Katy Perry, Avril Lavigne, Mark Zuckerberg, Trevor Noah, Prince Harry, Aubrey Plaza, Lindsey Vonn, Catherine McPhee, and Alex Smith. Now, we go back to the last two deaths, that being soul music legend Jackie Wilson, and perhaps the finest R&B singer to ever grace the face of God's earth, that being Marvin Gaye, who, of course, was killed by his father. I mentioned babies being born, and I mentioned two guys who sang baby-making music. So let's take a peek at the top of the R&B songs of the year. What a smooth segue that was. First of all, this was at the time actually called the Black Singles Chart, which was weird because like Hall & Oates would hit number one on it sometimes.
Wow. They were way off.
Yeah. Some of the biggest hits of 1984 included Solid by Ashford & Simpson. Great song. I Feel For You by Chaka Khan. When Doves Cry by Prince was actually the longest running number one on the R&B chart in 1984 at 8 weeks. And then you had Billy Ocean's Caribbean Queen. Cameo, New Edition, Lionel Richie, DeBarge, and Kool & the Gang also all had number one hits. The year also featured the first solo top 40 hit by a gentleman from Greenville, South Carolina. And I'm obviously going to play it, and it gives me the opportunity to do this. The wind starts to blow, and the rain begins to pour. But I'll be your umbrella, baby. Just lay on the floor. We'll make so much noise, we won't even hear that quiet storm coming in. This is Peebo Bryson, and if I'm ever in your arms again on the quiet storm.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to never do that again. And I broke my brother.
Oh, baby.
Stop it. Stop it.
Welcome to TJ's Procreation.
No, stop it. Stop it.
Okay, now. Before we steer this continuum ripping space bullet back to the present day, and we ask you to return your seat to its full upright position, smoke them if you got them, and fiddle when you can and work when you should, we have one last stop that we need to make. As we learned the last time we did this, in a time machine, you don't start at the start and end at the end. You typically end up right back where you began. We began talking about one of the biggest albums of the year, and so we'll close talking about big albums. It was a blockbuster year on that front and a huge year for debuts. I want y'all to listen to the groups who put their debut albums out in 1984. Bon Jovi, Anthrax, General Public, Rat, Steve Vai, The Smiths, Howard Jones, Run DMC, The Fat Boys, Great White, The Bangles, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, The Red Hot Chili Peppers, Scandal, Queensryche, The Cult, and The Judds.
Wow.
How's that grab you?
Not a bad lineup.
Quite an impressive list in my book. Now, in terms of big sellers, we're going to skip a few and come back to them. But 1984 saw the release of Legend by Bob Marley and the Wailers, which has sold 28 million copies at this point. 28 million.
Whew.
It would only be 27,999,999 if not for me.
Nah.
because I do own a copy of Legend. Madonna's sophomore album came out in 1984, and Like a Virgin would go on to sell 21 million copies. The year also gave us Reckless by Bryan Adams, Wham's Make It Big, and Private Dancer by Tina Turner, which would all go on to sell well over 10 million copies.
Can I sidestep for 1 second? Funny story about Wham.
Sure.
Today we were cleaning out our cabinet, our pantry of our food. And we were trying to figure out the last time we actually did a really good clean out where we checked the can, see if anything was expired. And we were cleaning it out and I found a bag of corn mix, cornmeal mix. Mm-hmm. And I knew exactly when the last time we had cleaned it out because I bought that bag of cornmeal for our brand new skillet from Lodge. And Lodge, if you guys remember, was the place where me and Will got out on last year's Whamageddon. So I was it had to be before December 25th.
The weird skillet museum.
Yep. Got whammed at the skillet museum. So we kept it because I'm pretty sure cornmeal lasts a while.
It does.
It's probably fun.
Metallica's second record, Ride the Lightning, came out in 1984, which is hard to believe. And made them one of the biggest acts in the burgeoning heavy metal genre. Chicago 17 and Mannheim Steamroller Christmas both came out in 1984 and both have sold well over 6 million copies. While Alabama's Roll On, Heartbeat City by the Cars, Agent Provocateur by Foreigner, Don Henley's Building the Perfect Beast, and Couldn't Stand the Weather by Stevie Ray Vaughan were all huge hits that dropped in 1984 as well. There were a couple of great live albums released during the year, including Alchemy Live by Dire Straits, which if you never heard it, please do yourself a favor and go find it. It is awesome. And also Budapest Live by Manfred Mann's Earth Band.
All right. Take it away, Tom.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Tom McGinnis, and that was your federally mandated Manfred Mann reference of the podcast. I hope you are satisfied.
Every time, Tom. Every time.
Interestingly, there were only 5 albums to reach number 1 during the year. For the first week of January until April the 14th, Michael Jackson's Thriller, released in 1983, held the top spot. So from the start of the year until the middle of April,
that makes
Michael
sense.
Jackson was at number 1. It was dethroned by Footloose, which stayed at number 1 for 10 straight weeks.
Go Kevin Bacon! Yeah, that's Kenny right. Loggins! Woo!
Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA followed that up and had a 4-week run at the top of the charts. And then from August 4th through the end of the year, Prince dunked on the competition like he did Eddie Murphy on the basketball court while wearing high heels, staying at number 1 the final 22 weeks of 1984. 22 weeks. Good
That's
God.
So long.
Now, there was one other album that managed to climb to the peak for one single week in late June. And we'll tell you about it as we close in just a moment, right after LD gives you the socials.
All right. So as we careen back into 2024, I am here to tell you guys that if you would like to donate to the show, we would love that. There are some amazing tiers on our Patreon, and so please take advantage of that. But you can find our Patreon at patreon.com/rockandrollheaven. Don't bother with Twitter. You can check out our Instagram at Rock and Roll Heaven LT. Check out our Facebook at Rock and Roll Heaven Pod. Our website, still not going to say it. It's in the show notes if you really want to go basically look at a graveyard of stuff that hasn't been touched for 4 years. And then our TikTok is Rock and Roll Heaven Pod. And you can email us at rockandrollheavenlt@gmail.com. And please make sure to check out all the other awesome Pantheon podcasts at pantheonpodcast.com, including one of the latest episodes of Getting Real, which don't want to tell you what it's about, but not kidding. I was just openly weeping for the entirety of the episode. So it's a really impactful, really important. And I will take this moment just to say, ladies, please remember that it's so important to get your mammograms. So if you haven't done it lately, please make an appointment today. I have got an appointment on the books, and I just want you guys to remember that it's, you know, all about catching it early. And I think I might have just given away the entire point of the podcast, but go check it out. It's incredible. And also, I'd like to say a huge thank you to our editor, Michael DeVestia, who makes us always sound incredible and cuts out my brother being really, really dumb and me saying a lot. So thank you to Michael. And also a huge thank you to Admin Thea for always nailing it on the socials. She's incredible. And to you guys, the listeners, thank you so much. We would not be here without you. So we appreciate it. I will hand it over to my brother and then we'll say our goodbyes.
No, y'all should say goodbye first.
All right, fine. I will. All right, Will, why don't you say goodbye first?
Stay golden, pony boys and pony girls.
No, you hang up first.
Nice.
No, I love you more.
I love you more. All right, guys. Thank you so much for checking out this episode of TJ's Time Machine. Check us out. I'm not sure if we're going to be taking next week off, but we're going to try to figure out our schedules and see if I can get the episode for Graham Part 4 written in that time. If not, there won't be an episode next week. But check us out on our next episode, which will be one of the probably penultimate episodes of, well, you can only have one penultimate episode. So I'm going to say.
Yeah, there's only one. There's only one next to last episode.
It might be the penultimate episode of Graham Parsons, but it will be coming out within the next 2 weeks. So thank you guys for your patience and sorry. We've had a lot of things happening, including illness in the family and crazy work schedule. So thank you guys for bearing with us. But we love you guys all so very much. And to all of us there at Rock and Roll Heaven, to all of you out there, we love you guys. Have a great week. All right, all TJ, right. Close us out.
So I will say bye, everybody. But I will also tell you that this other number one album in 1984 was by a California band that contained a bunch of highly unlikely rock stars, with the lead singer / harmonica player often wearing suit jackets and skinny ties on stage. They self-produced their album, mixing old school harmonies and instruments with new technology like drum machines and bass sequencing. They released a series of fun, heavy rotation staple videos to MTV. And here is a very late arriving fun fact. The video for the song we're about to hear was directed by Ed Griles, who also directed Time After Time and Girls Just Want to Have Fun by Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, okay.
The album in question was called Sports, and it had five big hit singles. Yeah. It has sold well over 7 million copies. It was one of my dad's favorite albums ever. It's one of my favorite albums ever. It's one of Will the Thrill's favorite albums ever. Might be LD's too. I haven't ever asked.
It's not like...
It's a fantastic disc. Yeah.
It is. It's a fantastic, terrific album. Absolutely. And this fellow is going to come up in the next series I do in an odd way.
Interesting.
Listen for a few weeks for that. We exit the era-shifting transfer portal known as TJ's Time Machine tonight with Sean, Chris, Bill, Mario, Johnny, and our patron saint, Mr. Huey Lewis. Sadly, he has been robbed of the ability to perform because of Meniere's disease, but we'll always have his absolutely kick-ass catalog, including this one.
TJ, not to interrupt, but from what I understand, there is actually a documentary that was currently being made about Huey Lewis by one of my favorite documentarians named Kirk Kenny, who did the documentary Dear Zachary. So if you know that documentary, you know how crushing it is. So, hopefully that will be coming out at some point. And if it does, maybe we can get Kurt on the show to talk about Huey Lewis.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Here is from the album Sports, If This Is It. Good night from Rock and Roll Heaven and from TJ's Time Machine.
There's nothing like having fun when old Mr. Sun is burning down to tan your body. You can tell it's summertime. We've got another outrageous day out there. If you're hanging out at the beach, checking out the waves, maybe putting on that string bikini. Ouch. Don't get too fried now. Keep it where you got it for all the best music. Like this one, the latest from Huey Lewis and the News.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.